And it is those seven ways that helped comprise the Iller Way of really taking care of your employees. It's the circle of life. If you take care of your employees, they'll take care of the customers. The customers will then take care of the ownership because they'll become repeat. They'll spread the word of how well you operate. The owners will hopefully then return that to the management team by compensating them, providing opportunities for growth and bonuses. And then the managers, the cycle continues, takes care of the employees.
Voices with value, stories with soul, tools for transformation. This is Innovation Insights. Innovate so you do not stagnate.
Welcome to another episode of Innovation Insights, where we dive deep into the mind shaping the future of industries through innovation, creativity, and groundbreaking research. We believe that innovation happens in all aspects of life. I'm your host, Dr. Yolanda Sanders. Today, we are thrilled to host Dr. Joakima Hiller, MBA in CAHE, who is a distinguished figure in the hospitality industry.
Joakima's journey is a fascinating blend of academic excellence and entrepreneurial spirit. She holds a bachelor's degree in restaurant, hotel, institutional, and tourism management from Purdue University Northwest, an MBA from Keller Graduate School of Management, and a doctorate in hospitality management from Iowa State University. Joakima has not only educated high school students through her online school, Hiller School of Hospitality, but has also imparted her vast knowledge to college students at institutions like the Chef's Academy, Harrison College of Indianapolis, Missouri State University, and currently, Indiana University Northwest. Her career achievements are just as impressive, having co-authored books such as The RevPAR Formula and The Red Book, penned 7 Easy Ways to Show Your Employees You Care, and contributed to I Survived, a collaborative book by survivors of life's challenges. Her creative prowess extends into children's literature with the story coloring book Sabrina and Her New Shoe, which initiates conversations about diversity. Joakima's accolades include being named one of the 25 most influential educators in global hospitality in 2021, among other numerous recognitions. Despite facing personal challenges, including becoming an above-the-knee amputee, she has continued to thrive as an educator, author, speaker, and mentor, significantly contributing to management and entrepreneurship. Join us as Dr. Joakima Hiller shares her unique insights and experiences. Tune into her podcast, Your Hospitality Moment That Mentors, to discover how you can further develop your career in hospitality. Let's dive into a conversation that promises to be as enlightening as inspiring.
So, Joakima, welcome to the Innovation Insights podcast. I'm so happy to have you here.
Thank you. So happy to be here.
Oh, so tell us a little bit about your background and how did you end up in the hospitality field?
Sure. Well, I am an Army brat. My father is a retired lieutenant colonel in the Army. And so growing up, we traveled quite a bit, as I did as a young person with my family and also with my church. So I just remember getting up in the morning. My dad would go off or to do his thing. And my mom and I have an older brother. We would go off and do our thing. And then when we would return at the end of the day, I would go, oh, wait a minute. Who made our bed? Mom, you didn't make us make the bed this morning. Not understanding that there was an entire department called housekeeping. Or we would go down for breakfast in the morning and then we would eat and we would leave. And I'd go, oh, we're going to go to jail because, Daddy, you didn't pay for breakfast. Not understanding that there were hotels where breakfast was included in the rate. And so for me, hotels began to be what I call magic places because things would happen and I would have no idea how they occurred. So when people would say I was probably early as about 6 or 7 years old, well, what do you want to do when you grow up, young lady? I could articulate that I wanted to work in or do something with a hotel.
So that's a great story. And it is amazing how childhood, what you're exposed to, what you experience, how that impacts your career.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then fast forward, I was about 15, 16 years old and had an opportunity to work within the human resources department of a hotel that was in our area, the largest hotel, and it was attached to a live theater. And the rest was history. I was hooked.
Oh, well, then how did you then move into academia from working in industry?
Sure. I was recruited to turn around a hotel in the Indianapolis, Indiana market. And I actually declined it at first. This gentleman, I had just opened up a hotel in Portage, Indiana, and had been operating it for about a year. And I got this voicemail message from this gentleman who says, "You probably don't remember me, but I saw you speak in the Chicago, Illinois area. And ever since that presentation, I said, I really want this young lady on my team." And he says, "I now have that position that is available on my team as general manager of this hotel." And so I declined it because I was working 7 minutes from my home. I had a wonderful staff that I had hired and trained, and everybody had the Hiller Hospitality stamp on them. And it was my baby, my hotel. And then I thought about it. I was like, this is my opportunity to move, to branch out, to test the waters, to see if the policies and procedures and practices that I had created could be used elsewhere. And so he made me an offer I couldn't refuse, got there, and it wound up being, unfortunately, one of the worst jobs I ever had. But in doing so, that year that I worked to turn around that hotel, I had built an awesome team, including my assistant general manager at the time. Name was Jill Woods. And so one day I looked at her and I said, "You're ready, aren't you?" And she goes, "I am." And so I thought, it's my time to move out of her way and to advocate for her to be the general manager, that it's her turn. And this all happened so quickly. That night, I called my mom as usual. Usually I would call my mom to cry. "Oh, I want to come home. I can't do this." And she would say, "Honey, stop crying. This is what you wanted to do, so do it." So this particular night, I said, "Mom, I think Jill is ready to be general manager, and I need to move out of her way. But what am I going to do? This is it. I wanted to be the general manager of a hotel. Where else do I go? You know, do I go to another hotel and manage it? I have no idea where my career goes next." I'd already worked for a corporate as a traveling trainer. And my mom said, "Well, baby, I think you're missing your calling." I was like, "I'm 20 some years into this, and now you're telling me I'm missing my calling?" She goes, "You're the one who thinks you need to be in a hotel." She says, "I think you need to be teaching it." And what many people don't know is that the majority of my family, on both my mom's side and my dad's side, were educators. And so it was like a little rebellion. "No, I'm not going to teach. I'm not going to teach. But let me show you how this was all divine, if you will." That night, after I got off the phone with my mom, I said, "Well, let me see what's out there." By this time, I had my MBA, and I was searching for opportunities within education. And I stumbled across this ad online for a program director It was a culinary college who had an associate's degree in pastry arts and culinary arts. And now they wanted a bachelor's program in hospitality. And it needed a program director to operate the program. I applied that night. I had worked so hard for this last year that I hadn't even hooked up my laptop. So I had to hook up my laptop, figure out how to work the Wi-Fi and everything. And I applied for this job. The next day, I got a phone call that said, when can I come in for an interview? And I said, well, I happen to be off today. I could come in today. They said, we'll see you at such and such time. Went in for the interview and left with my next job.
I love it.
So when I wrote my resignation letter, which was a few pages long, I wrote a succession plan that would advocate for Jill to be the general manager and that I would stay on for at least a year to make sure that I mentored and guided her and that she would be able to carry on all of the work that we had done to turn that hotel around to be operating more efficiently. So that was my entry into education as the program director for the hospitality and restaurant management program at a culinary college.
That is excellent. It's just excellent. So one thing that I really appreciate that you said was moving out of the way and that you created a succession plan. And there is a time in positions that it is time to move out of the way. Would you talk a little bit more about that and then what the succession plan looked like that you did?
Sure. Well, as a little girl, knowing that I wanted to work in a hotel, that was really the extent. And my dreams and goals began to get greater as I progressed in the industry. But general manager was it. I had never saw myself being anything more than the general manager of a hotel. That was like the epitome of being in the hospitality or the hotel industry. And so I'm glad that my mom saw what I didn't see to suggest to me that maybe I need to be teaching this. And I realized that's what I had been doing all along. Every position that I had in the hotel industry, I wound up teaching or facilitating orientation. I wound up being a trainer at one point for a global hotel company, traveling all over the world, teaching, in essence, employees of the hotel. And then there I was with Gio, mentoring her. And I talk a lot about there's a difference between being able to advise someone, and then there's a difference between advising and then mentoring. But the ultimate is being in a position to advocate for someone. Who better to be the next general manager of that hotel than someone that I had advised, mentored, and trained? She would be able to carry on everything that we worked so hard to implement. And so when I wrote my, I didn't just leave because of Gio. When it came time for my one-year review with the owner, he said, I appreciate you finding the money and my money and making this hotel much more efficient. However, none of my other hotels are making money, and so I cannot give you your bonus. Instead, what he offered me was this state-of-the-art tread climber. And so he asked me if I would accept that. And so, of course, I wanted to cry in that moment, but I held back the tears and I said, thank you. I would love to accept the tread climber. I greatly appreciate that. And as soon as I left, I began to make my resignation letter. I had never worked or was challenged so in turning that hotel around and then to not be compensated, actually. For it, I knew I had to go, but I didn't want to leave the hotel hanging. So in my resignation, I wrote out a plan that included Jill as the general manager and the lessons that I would teach her I would stay on for that year, the lessons that I would continue to teach her while I was there. And she flourished and she operated it for another, I believe, 2 years.
Yeah. Oh, thank you for sharing that. That's making those decisions and making sure that you're valued and moving the right direction in your career is sometimes hard to do.
It was very hard. And people cringe when I tell the end of the story, which was I asked him if he would he could have the tread climber delivered. And so he and another one of the owners got a truck, brought it to my apartment and got it to the door. And they opened the door and they looked and there was 2 flights of steps. I'm sorry, but I had to laugh to see them huff and puff to get that heavy tread climber up 2 flights of steps into my apartment. And I kept it until my final move from my last position to this one. So I wound up letting it go, giving it to someone before I moved back to Northwest Indiana. It was a sign that it's time for me to stand up for myself.
Right.
Which I hadn't really done before.
Yeah. No, that makes so much sense. That makes so much sense. Well, something else that you mentioned earlier was the Hiller Way. I want to hear more about the Hiller Way.
Sure. Well, in my beginning in the industry, learned a lot of what not to do. And so I promised myself, if I was ever in a position to be the supervisor, the head, the general manager, the boss, the department head, that I would do the things that I wanted to do in regards to supervising or managing my employees. And so the Hiller Way is combined of what I call, I have a booklet called 7 Easy Ways to Show Your Employees You Care. And it is those 7 ways that helped comprise the Hiller Way of really taking care of your employees. It's the circle of life. If you take care of your employees, they'll take care of the customers. The customers will then take care of the ownership because they'll become repeat. They'll spread the word of how well you operate. The owners will hopefully then return that to the management team by compensating them, providing opportunities for growth and bonuses. And then the managers, the cycle continues, takes care of the employees. Employees take care of the customers, take care of the owners. So that to me is the circle of life and the Hiller Way, Hiller Hospitality Way really kind facilitates moving in that circle. I really believe in as being a manager of others, of taking care of them.
Well, yeah, what an innovative way to brand that too. I love it. So you've been very innovative and entrepreneurial in your career. Would you talk a little bit more about like Hiller Inc. and
yes. Okay. So Hiller Inc. and sorry, I'm getting excited because this was my first kind of venture out into being an entrepreneur. And it was INK, which I thought was so savvy. But growing up again, I go back to my family. My father was really into technology. So we were the first ones who had the Atari video game. We were the first ones in the family on the block who had the next type of video games that were out there. And so we were the first ones that had a video camera. So my dad videoed every event that happened in our family's lives. But then we were also the first ones that had those big computers, desktop computers with the printer, and it was all top of the line and everything. And I was so fortunate because I had just started college and we didn't have computers in high school. That's how early or long ago, I'm telling my age, how long ago this was. But I could type my papers. I didn't have to wait to get into the computer lab at school. I could do everything right there at home and then print it out. Because back then you turned everything in by hand and it was wonderful. Well, then I started to see I could make my own birthday cards. I could, my parents celebrate their anniversary. I could make their anniversary card. And I believe the story goes that I was sitting in school working on my bachelor's degree, and I had one of those cards. I was editing it, looking at the words, because I usually came up with my own words and pictures and everything. And I had a classmate. She said, "Oh my goodness, you did that." I said, "Yeah, I made it at home. This isn't professional. This isn't store-bought." She said, "Oh, this is professional. This is so clear. This is wonderful." She says, "I'm getting married. Can you do my bridal shower invitations?" And I was like, whoa, wait a minute now. I've never done anything like that. I don't know that I'm ready. And she says, "You're ready. How much?" And I was like, "Well, I've never thought of charging." She says, "I'm going to show this to my mother and I'll bring you what I needed to say. Can you do 200? I was like, "For a bridal shower?" She says, "Well, I've got a lot of family out of town, so I just want to make sure that they are aware of it." So I got home, I started looking at stuff, and I'm like, "I don't know how much to charge." And that was the beginning, because then she had me do her thank you cards for the bridal shower. She had me do her program for her wedding. She had me do her baby shower. So all throughout college, I was able to do these types of things, and it just completely took off to the point to where my niche, if you will, was doing the program. When people sit down at a wedding, was the program that they would actually see and look at the story of the bride and groom. And that was my entry into event planning. Was, "Oh, wow, if you can do this, can you coordinate all of this? What can you do? Can you help us plan this and put this together?" And that was the beginning.
Oh, so interesting. That was your entry into event planning, too.
I know. Yeah.
Well, you've had another business, which was the Hiller School of Hospitality. Tell us about that.
Oh, that was truly, when people say a labor of love, that was definitely it. So now here I am in education now, and I began to hear some rumblings about the caliber of student that we were getting. And coming from high school, or these students didn't have a general knowledge, if you will, of hospitality. So what was happening was that they would get a few semesters into their college education, and then they would quit because it was now an aha moment. Oh, I'm going to be working when everybody else is having a good time. That's the nature of the industry. We're there at some of the most important times of other people's lives. We're working. I worked so many New Year's Eves that the first time I had it all, I didn't know what to do. So I thought, how is it that I can impact the student that decides to go into hospitality at college? Well, we need to start earlier. So I thought, how can I have classes that would introduce high school students to hospitality, the basics? And so I covered online, I worked with an instructional designer, and we created what I called the Hiller School of Hospitality. We talked about everything, or had classes on everything from event planning to lodging operations to restaurants and cruise ships. We covered everything. I even offered a $250 scholarship for students who would register and apply for the scholarship. So It was my baby. And I just think it was well before its time, because it was hard to get parents to invest in the fee, or I eventually started to offer it for free, but they couldn't see how their child was going to be able to learn online. But now you've got entire high schools that are online education. I would love to be able to recreate it today, but need that instructional designer, and she's off doing some other things these days.
Well, how innovative. And I love that you saw a need in K through 12 education that could impact post-secondary education or secondary education. That's, and ultimately the industry too.
For sure. Because I think if they had have gone through my classes, they could have gotten an entry-level job and have been more prepared than anyone else their age. So I just, like I said, I just really believe it was well before its time.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Incredible. Just incredible. You're also an author and have authored several books, and some have been recognized with awards. Tell us about one, your goal in writing books, especially.
Sure. Well, my initial goal was, I used to grow up hearing people say, you want to hone your craft. And it didn't hit me until I realized that in order to hone your craft, you have to know it well enough to teach others. You have to know it well enough to speak on it. You have to know it well enough to be what I call an extemporaneous speaker. I have an aunt who I saw one day, who she spent many years, I want to say over 30 years in the school system. And I remember she wasn't on program one day, but they came to her and said, our speaker didn't show up. Can you be the speaker? And I saw her take out this little notepad and she jotted down some things. And they introduced her and she got up and delivered a speech that sounded and looked like she had been preparing for it for months. And it dissed it. And I realized that was because she knew her craft of education better than anyone else. And so to me, being an author, talking about the hospitality industry is a sign that I have honed my craft. And so I think that was my original goal. But that last job that I had in the industry that really was so challenging, just so happened that Jill and I became really close friends. And I happened to be sitting at her kitchen table one day. We both at this point had moved on to do other things within hospitality. And I asked her, I said, hey, do you want to write a book? And she said, yeah. I said, have you started? And she said, no, I haven't. And she goes, well, what about you? I know you've always wanted to write a book. Have you started it? I said, no, Jill, I haven't. And we looked at each other. She went and found a sheet of paper. And in that moment, we wrote the outline for our first booklet, the RevPAR formula, which stands for Revenue Per Available Room, which is a hotel term. And we talked about our experiences in managing that hotel together, being in the trenches. We talked about how you can forge through those types of challenges and still be profitable.
Love it. I love it. And so you also have another book too, The 7 Easy Ways to Show Your Employees You Can Care. And what was the motivation for that book?
Oh, wow. Okay. So now I'm relocated from Indianapolis to Springfield, Missouri. and I am a teaching, and I'm also working on my doctorate. So I'm a little bit removed from being in the industry, but all of my colleagues are still in the industry. My students are working in the industry. And I remember it was around Thanksgiving. I had went home to spend with my family. And whenever I would go home, I would reconnect with the hotels that I had worked at and managed. I would check into the managers that were still there operating the different properties. I would touch base to students that had graduated from the culinary college. And it just seemed like every single person that I had talked to, whether they were seasoned colleagues or they were new students branching out in the industry, they said one thing to me. Miss Joakima, I love my job. I love working in the industry. I just wish the people in charge cared about me. And I remember at home with my parents sitting at, I don't know, a lot of things happen at the kitchen table. Sitting at the kitchen table during the Thanksgiving time, it just hit me and said, I said, what am I supposed to do with that information? Why am I talking two or three people? But every single person that I had talked to during this holiday season. So we're talking double digits. It was maybe 10, maybe 15. I don't quite remember, but it was a significant number of people that I had talked to. All of them said, I want to stay. I want to be a part of the hotel or the hospitality industry. But why don't they care about me, someone who's giving their all for them? Making the guest happy, making the hotel look good. Why don't they care about me? If they would, I would be more excited, more loyal. And I just kept going, why is this touching me? Well, why are people telling me about this? What am I supposed to do with that? I can't be their supervisor. I'm not managing anymore. And something said to me, write what you would want those managers that are supervising others to know. Write a love letter to them that says, let me tell you how I cared for my employees during my time in the industry. And that's what I did. I sat down and I free-flowing of remembering some key tactics and things that I did to care for my employees. When I was done, I had 7, and they were all easy, low cost. And I went back to my very first supervisor, the director of human resources of my first job when I was 15, 16 years old, and I had him write the foreword. And so he talks in the foreword about who I was growing up in the industry and how he showed me that he cared about me. I'm getting emotional. We're still good friends today. In fact, he doesn't know it, but I call him my godfather. And so then it was so appropriate to have him talk about how he coached me out of my shyness. And then I turned around and was able to come up with these 7 ways to care for my employees. And so that's how I look at it. It's my love letter. So I encouraged all of those colleagues that had come to me. I said, it's a bold move, but drop it off on their desk. They don't have to know where it came from. But maybe it will prick their heart.
Absolutely. One thing that I so appreciate about you is that you see a need, and as an innovator, you take action on it.
Yeah, I have to, because I wanted someone to do it for me. When I think about one of the things that my students say is, Ms. Joakima, you have experienced so much. A lot of it negatively, when you've overcome these challenges, how? And I go, I honestly don't know how, because I was alone in many of those challenges. And when I think about the podcast that I have, Your Hospitality Moment That Mentors, what I did was one day I sat down and I wrote out all the situations that I had encountered in my life, in my career, where I was just twisting in the wind to try and figure it out. And that's what my podcast is about. Let me tell you about this situation, and here's how I handled it. Do that. You can learn from me that, or here's how I made it through. You want to do this. So if I can help someone, I really would love to do that.
And we will make sure that your podcast is included in the show notes too, because again, you're just giving so much. One thing you mentioned, you have referred to yourself, or your students have referred to you as Miss Joakima, but you're actually Dr. Joakima Giller. And that's how we met, was when you joined the doctoral program at Iowa State. Tell us a little bit about why you decided to pursue a doctorate degree and a little bit about your dissertation research.
Sure. Let's see. I had transitioned into working for the Culinary College, and I was just two and a half hours away from my home in Northwest Indiana and from my alma mater, which is Purdue University Northwest. And so I would always say, hey, I'm coming into town. I would talk to my department head, who was still there, and to some of my professors, and say, I'm coming home. Do you need me to speak? Do you have a class? What can I do? Do you want me to do some sort of promotional video? Use my time wisely while I'm home. And so I had gone and spoke as usual, and they pulled me aside afterwards and said, if you want to teach, which you should. And I told them, I know I'm teaching now at this culinary college, but I don't know that this is my future. There's something calling me back into the industry. I think I want to be the vice president of training and development. And so they were like, you need to be in the classroom. You need to get your doctorate so that you can move into teaching at the university level. And the department head at the time said, and you got 5 years to do it because I'm retiring. Beep, beep, beep. I'm smart enough to know that he wasn't saying, come get my job. But it was a challenge to say, if you want the type of sustainability in education as he had, that the best way, or really the only way to do it, was that I was going to have to take it another step forward and get a terminal degree. So when I returned, I said, I got to get started. And that's how I started working on my doctorate. And with my dissertation is, it takes me back to that 15, 16-year-old and having a supervisor, a boss who saw things in me that I didn't see. So when I finished my bachelor's degree and I told him, I know I'm a human resources person, that you've taught me everything. I sat in on departments being unionized. He allowed me to sit in on sexual harassment situations. He was the epitome of a mentor. I said, but I got to keep going. I need to know operations so that I can be a general manager. That's what I wanted. And so I know I broke his heart probably, because he truly taught me and mentored me. But when I got to was promoted to my first assistant manager position, I told him, I can't do this. I'm not ready. This isn't for me. Although I focused on people, I missed the whole operations. I'm so far behind. How can I manage people who know more about this to me? And he says, well, what do you know? I said, I know how to treat people. And he said, that's what they need. They'll show you how to operate, but you need to go in there and you need to treat people well. And so that stuck with me all the way until now I'm working on my dissertation. And I thought, I've got to share with people that one skill that will make you sustainable within the hospitality or hotel industry, and that's social intelligence. And I know everyone has heard about emotional intelligence. I've seen all sorts of journal articles and books and all of this information, workshops and classes, and it's been woven into different college and university programs, but nobody's talking about social intelligence. And to me, when I look at its definition, it is exactly what a general manager needs at a hotel because of the myriad of people that they interact with. It's not just employees. It's not just customers. They've got ownership. They've got the public. They've got vendors. And social intelligence says you can't just manage your emotions. You've got to know, be able to observe and be able to look at people's nonverbal behavior and know what their emotions are. But the second piece to that definition is you need to know how to act. What do? Are they mad enough to where they require an apology? Or are you just going to say, well, thank you for letting us know. Have a great day. That's the difference between having a customer who becomes more loyal because they got that apology and they come back. Or that customer that leaves and then puts a negative review online, tells other people you don't want to go there. They did nothing. I didn't even get an apology. And so I am a champion of social intelligence being, if nothing else, because it encapsulates. Is that a word? Encapsulates all the other skills that we say that they need, that people need in order to be a manager, interacting with other people. It includes emotional intelligence. It includes personal communications. It includes how to handle problems. It includes all of that. And so once I graduated with my bachelor's, that's what my first boss was telling me. Use what you have. What we worked on for the last 4, 5, 6 years, use your social intelligence. And so my dissertation was on, and I can't probably remember the full title, it was so long, but what I was able to prove is that someone with a high level of social intelligence will feel more comfortable in their role in the industry. And they call it person to vocation fit. So that person, that individual will feel fit for that role if they know how to handle it. And so that will then lead to a decrease in turnover in the industry. So they may have to keep going until they get into that one position that fits well, but they'll still be loyal to the industry. They won't go, oh, well, you know what? I didn't like being a front desk agent. I didn't like working as a restaurant server. They'll still stay in. They'll keep looking for that position that really is the epitome of a supervisory role for them over the years.
Fascinating. And I feel like it really applies to so many disciplines and industries.
It does. The service industry, I think. And I think because I remember, oh, wow, way, way long ago when I was working on my bachelor's degree, I remember one of my professors drawing a stick figure on the dry erase board, or it might have been a chalkboard, who knows. But they drew a stick figure, and then they drew lines to all of these people that one general manager had to communicate with. And I thought, that's what your job is. Your employees are going to operate the hotel, but you need to communicate with them on what the goal is, what's the vision, what's the priorities. You need to be able to show them that you care. And by having social intelligence, you can do that because you'll know when they're having a rough day and how to react. You'll know when they're having a great day and how to react. You'll know when that vendor who's bringing in your Coca-Cola, you'll be able to observe how they're doing that day and how to react. And it just continues to allow you to build those relationships. And I think a testament to that is right now I am teaching a class for the very first time at my current place of employment on hospitality and tourism management. And every week I have a new and different guest speaker who is currently working in the industry. And my students are going, what? This person is the CEO of a city's tourism department. How do you know that person? And I go, well, actually, I've known this person for 15 years when they were the director of sales for a hotel. It's because of that social intelligence and those relationships that I built over the years that we're still, at the very least, Facebook friends. And so I believe it's been tested and tried by me, and I 100% support, if nothing else, we need to infuse social intelligence into our programs.
I love that you have framed that and the way you frame that up. It really speaks to networking, the power of people and relationships. We just need them.
We need it.
Yeah.
We need it. And it's funny because even today on Facebook, if I put, when will I ever get my own hotel? Or I'm going to ditch that vision or that first dream or idea or whatever. I'll have people who will come out of the woodwork from high school who will say, because you're going to hire me as your construction worker. You're going to hire me for this. No, everybody's waiting on that. And that's because of the relationships that I've
been. Okay, I want us to talk a little bit about Sabrina. I have become a fan of Sabrina and got to know Sabrina through social media, as you were just speaking about the importance of social media and keeping those connections that way. Tell us about Sabrina and how Sabrina came into your life.
Absolutely. Sabrina has her own fan club. And so that I don't get in trouble, her name is Sabrina Latrice Louise, and it is hyphenated, Hiller. So that's her full name. So I became a right leg above the knee amputee. It will be 10 years in August of this year. Still, I have moments where it still seems like yesterday. Absolutely, positively changed, uprooted, turned around my life. And one of the very first pieces of advice that I received from another amputee, there was this program called Peer Visitor. And so my peer visitor, while I was still in a hospital, came in to see me, and she was wearing a prosthesis, and she was walked in without any assistance. And she too was a teacher at another college. And so the idea behind it was to say, you're going to be able to get out of this hospital. At some point, you'll get your prosthesis and you'll be able to move on and continue with your life. Get this pity party over with. Hey, I'm your example that you're going to get through this. And so one of the pieces of advice she told me, she says, when you get out of here, you're going to have so many different types of medical appointments. You're going to have physical therapy. You're going to have a doctor's appointment about pain management. You're going to have a psychology appointments. You're assigned a psychiatrist once you get out of the hospital, because this is a life altering moment And so she says, so that they don't become so clinical, you should name your prosthesis once you get it. So that they don't say your prostating device and we need to inspect your prosthesis, and they'll start to call it by name. And I kept that information in the back of my head. So we fast forward several months. I'm out of the hospital. I'm at home. I get fitted. I bring Sabrina home, or I bring my prostating device home. And my goddaughter was from out of town because I lived in Missouri all by myself. So my family had come from Northwest Indiana to visit me. And my goddaughter, who was about, I want to say she was 6 years old, said, oh, KK, I am supposed to give my prosthesis a name. What should I name her? And when I was a little girl, before I became shy, people tell me that I was quite sassy. I was a ballerina and a tap dancer. And so my goddaughter reminds me so much of who I was. She was sassy. She put her hand on her hip and she looked that leg that was green because it's my favorite color. She looked that green leg. She was leaning up against the wall, up and down, and she goes, Sabrina. I said, okay, do you know a Sabrina? I think Sabrina's like a good witch or a bad witch or something. Where you get that from? Because we don't have anybody in our family named that. Where'd that name come from? And she goes, she looks like a Sabrina. And it stuck. And I not only did my doctor's appointments become about Sabrina, not only did they use it, but if I had an appointment where I didn't wear her, they were asking, well, where is Sabrina? I'm here for me. You ready to take my blood? And you asking, where is this Sabrina? You do know she's weak. But I think the epitome of it was that not only did my doctors and physical therapists and all of the clinicians that were in my life at the time latch on to that, but so did my family and my friends and my social media contacts, my church family. And that's when I really knew I was onto something. I was sitting at church one Sunday and I was still using a walker. And so I would sit on the aisle and I would put my walker in between me and the next seat. And so I would get there early so people wouldn't have to step over me or anything. And I remember seeing this lady run from across the church and she was yelling, Sabrina, Sabrina. Now, there is another lady at our church named Sabrina. So I thought for sure she was going after her. But she crossed the entire church, came and stood next to me and looked over at my leg and said, just here to see what show Sabrina did on today. And to make sure she was okay. It was like, I don't even know this woman. But she knew Sabrina and knew that Sabrina liked to change her shoes up and look nice and cute. And she said she just needed to see, make sure Sabrina was okay. And I said, thank you. And I want to make sure that people know how important that was, that my community embraced her. Because honestly, between Sabrina, my psychiatrist, and God, and my community, that saved my life. It really did. Sabrina was my buffer. When I felt my worst and had my worst days and thought about how, you know, I could just run off the road or how nice it would be to overdose on all this pain medication and stuff that I have, or how about getting hit by a train, or I just want to be put out of my misery, I would channel who I used to be, that sassy girl, and my goddaughter through Sabrina. And it gave me life. It gave me my life back. And now I can't get rid of her. Sabrina is the star in the family.
Thank you for sharing that and being vulnerable and sharing the impact and how this is another example of innovation and how to innovatively take something that's inanimate, but use it to help facilitate self-care.
Absolutely. It has allowed me to have conversations with people that you never would have had. And I struggled with returning to work and getting back out there because I was fearful that people would then look at me as, oh, there's that handicapped lady. Versus, here is this hospitality educator and profession. Because I had worked a lifetime honing my craft. I've got books. I've been through the trenches. I've cleaned 16, 26 rooms in a day. I've paid my dues. And you mean to tell me now all of that's gone because I now am someone with a disability? So I held on really tight to not letting my disability be in the forefront. But when I saw how Sabrina, people loved her, and we began to have conversations again about being a workaholic, being a woman, being a Black woman, a one without any children, who wasn't married, and how you could have a situation like me, which is I was such oblivious to anything else going on in my life, living in a town where I didn't know anyone. All I did was work. Worked on my doctorate, worked on my teaching, honing that craft, until I didn't pay attention to what was going on with my own body. And before you knew it, went to the doctor. She prescribed some medication for me. It says right there on the bottom, I still has it, high risk of blood clots. And it created blood clots in my legs. And this to me is the defining moment that shows just how out of it I was. When the nurse said that the doctor said, if you can't come back in tomorrow, can't wait, if you feel that bad, that you can't wait to come into the office tomorrow, go to the emergency room. I asked the nurse, I said, well, where is the emergency room? And she says, well, we're affiliated with such and such hospital. So I typed into my phone the name of the hospital, and I got myself in my car, and why was it right down the street? I have been passing it every single day on my way to my job, a big old hospital, and I had no idea where it was. But I got myself to that hospital, and like I said, in a matter of months, I left out of there minus one leg.
Yeah. Thank you again for sharing. And you have demonstrated that Sabrina's a partner.
She's my friend.
But doesn't define who you are and your amazing career and everything that you have done and continuing to do. I would love for you to define innovation for us.
Sure. For me, I think, and I will say that oftentimes when people use that word, I think that's not me. But as I look back over my life and my career, to me, innovation is being able to take something that is usual, common, everyday, normal, and to add something unusual to it, an unusual idea, an unusual take, an unusual component, task, put it in an unusual environment. And that is innovative, because if it's usual and normal, how would you be able to get that unusual out of it? You've got to be able to see it and have that vision. And I think that is what happened really with Sabrina, who, by the way, she would not be my friend anymore if I didn't tell everyone this. She has her own coloring book.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I did see that. I did see that. And we'll make sure that's also linked in.
Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. And your productivity. And again, you just seeing a need or an opportunity. And as you said in your definition, taking something and then making it different. I mean, you're just such a great example of that. And I love your definition. And thank you for being here with us today.
Thank you for having me. Been a pleasure.
You are just, I don't know how you get it all done or have gotten it all done.
I don't know either. But that fashion, I don't know either. My mom is no longer with us. But I remember in her last days, I was still challenged by being an amputee. I was still challenged by not being able to continue the type of career that I thought that I wanted within the hospitality industry. I was challenged by, I think I used to say I looked like an alien with a prosthesis. And so I thought love, getting married, having a family was not in my future. And my mom said to me, baby, hold on. Because she knew that I was, I know people look and they go, how could I have had these thoughts? But suicide was such a prevalent thought in my life. And so she told me to hold on, that better was coming if I just hold on. And so I've been holding on. I've been holding on.
You have been. You have been. And you have upcoming nuptials too, don't you?
I do. I wish she was here so I could tell her just how right she was. I wish I could tell her.
Oh, she's watching you. She's watching you. Oh, goodness. Well, congratulations on your upcoming nuptials and just everything. And we'll have you back because I know that you're going to continue to do like amazing things.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you so much.
I enjoy following you and your journey. And I just remember the day that we met on campus and I was just excited to see you in the program. And
thank you so much.
Yeah. Oh, well, thank you again. And to our listeners, we hope today's conversation with Dr. Hiller has enriched your understanding of hospitality and people, and just people, and how to be innovative in your approach to embracing people. And so remember that every challenge is an opportunity for growth and innovation. Please make sure that you follow Dr. Hiller's work and tune into her podcast, Your Hospitality Moment That Mentors. And the link will be in the show notes. And so for more inspiring stories and innovative ideas and leaders in our industries, please continue to listen to the Innovation Insights podcast. Subscribe, stay connected with us, and visit our website too. And thank you for tuning in. As I always say, keep innovating, keep dreaming, and keep making a difference.